Hello and welcome to the Colts Cover 2 podcast. I'm Joel A. Erickson. I'm joined, as always, by Nate Atkins. We apologize for taking a week off. Nate was resting, getting ready for what's to come this week. It's already been a busy week for both of us. It's going to get much, much busier. We're taping this on Wednesday. It's going to get much, much busier starting on Thursday, specifically late at night. I think one of the worst things, Nate, about covering the first round of the draft is how late it starts.
I know. It's weird because, like, it never matches up well for us, not that anybody cares about our schedules, but, like, Saturday is the one day that, like, starts early, but it's coming off the night, the two straight nights, so it's a little weird. Last year was nice because they made the pick, like, at, like, 8:20 or something like that, but this year, number 15 pick, and if Chris Ballard does a Chris Ballard special and trades back, it could be a late night, so I guess we could be prepared for that.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is just, like, from a, like, fan standpoint, I wonder if they feel the same way we do. Like, it just feels like you're all geared up for Thursday, and you wake up ready for it, and I'm going to make a pancake joke because in draft day, the Seahawks gym is GM is a pancake-eating mother. Bleep! But like,
I watched that movie tonight, by the way. It's a holiday.
Yeah, it is. It is. I probably will watch it tonight. I almost always do. If I don't watch it tonight, I'll watch it tomorrow before the draft starts. But but the biggest thing is just like you get geared up for it and excited for it. And like right now, you and I are getting to the point where we have one more major piece or a major story to do after we get done taping this. And then you just kind of wait for like an entire day.
Hurry up and wait.
And you know,
it goes on so long that like all the rumors start getting crazy. Like we're soon going to hear that like 15 teams are trading into the top 10.
Yeah.
It's just like, and we're all crazy.
And 8 quarterbacks will be taken in the top 10 somehow.
Yep.
Maybe 9. So all that part I think is the tough part of it starting at 8. It's just like from a fan standpoint. I remember last year, like these last 2 days is when the Will Levis to Indianapolis thing like really like took hold in like a super intense way. It was there before that, but it was in the last however many hours that it really, really, really got to be everywhere and pervasive. And so like, I think I'd have to go back and listen to it. I didn't go back and listen to the podcast, but I didn't go back and listen to the podcast, but like, I don't remember how much we talked about like the Will Levisness of everything, because to you and me, it wasn't like that big of a deal. And then like, by the time we got over there to the facility, like all we were talking about with the rest of the beat was, why does everybody think they're going to pick Will Levis? And I think part of that is that a bunch of mocks are going to drop tomorrow. A bunch of the big mocks drop either tonight or tomorrow. The biggest names, Jeremiah, Kuiper, those guys. And there's a lot more reporting about what's going to happen. Generally, people don't really know what's going to happen with the Colts. Is there anything that you've heard or rumored that bears muster? Because there's been a lot of floating that the Colts are going to do things that would be very, 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 very out of character.
Oh, you mean like trade up for Marvin Harrison? Did someone write that this week?
In your defense, you weren't really reporting that was what was going to happen.
I was writing on fantasy land.
Yeah, you were more like saying, hey, this is what I would do if I was there.
Yeah, pretty much. I will say I don't see that as impossible, but there's not many things I would call impossible right now. The only thing I'd say is impossible is they're not drafting a quarterback. That's the one thing I can tell you is not going to happen in the first round tomorrow. But outside of that, I mean, no, it's very unlikely they trade up to the range where they have to get that done. Like I've seen a lot of people mock drafts and other ideas that they're going to trade up for Malik Nabers. And that one I do not see him specifically. I don't think he's going to be a fit here. But the idea that they trade up to some level after a pass catcher, I don't think is out of the question. It's not the most likely thing because like Chris Ballard just said, his draft is very deep in pass catchers, or certainly wide receiver. And also, you know, his nature is not to really give up a lot to pay the prices to go up in the first round. But there's an argument you can make that there's a top tier of receivers, and there's three of them. Like I said, I don't think Malik Nabers is a fit for the Colts, but the other two are. And, you know, they could see this as their one shot if they view Michael Pittman Jr. more than a number one in an ideal world. The only route they're ever going to have to get a number one is to either draft one high or trade for one on a high price deal, which they're not going to do. So I don't rule it out that way. The one thing, I mean, there's some different stuff that I don't know if I have anything as far as like what I think they're going to do. There's some ideas I think are more plausible than others. Like I wouldn't be shocked if they did trade up a little bit for a guy like Dallas Turner. I think that makes sense. And that would align with the fact that they went hard after Danielle Hunter and didn't get him, but didn't go after any other edge players, because basically their approach to the edge position is, we like the guys we have, but we'll upgrade it if we can. They weren't able to beat max protection late in the year. They know they don't have that, you know, true number one type edge rusher. They just haven't really found in their minds the route to go get him. If there's a way to trade up, you know, five or fewer spots to get Dallas Turner, he could be the one guy in this draft that they see as being that, and maybe a guy who falls into an affordable range because of just what the rush is right now for quarterbacks and wide receivers and offensive tackles. So, I wouldn't rule out like a small jump up either for Dallas Turner or Brock Bowers. I could see one of those happening. Trading too far up is probably not going to happen for them. And I don't see Malik Nabers as a fit here either.
Nate's not covered Ballard as long as I have, and you can tell because he's not quite as beaten down. he still dreams of interesting things happening in terms of trades up and moves that we don't see coming.
Well, look, the most likely thing is they trade back twice and take like a blocking tight end. I think that would pass sort of.
that might be a little over the top.
absolutely. Chris Ballard's track record tells us what they're going to do and not do. I leave a little bit of a door open for the influence of Shane Steichen and Jim Irsay. Never forget that one time Jim Irsay did make a major move happen after getting off the phone with a Colts franchise legend. So I'm just saying there are certain wild card events that can happen that can make it so Chris Ballard's track record really doesn't have anything to do with it. But you just never quite know. It's a crazy week. It's a hypothetical crazy week. So here we are.
Nate woke up and chose violence. That's what that was. That was violence.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I will say real quickly, the one thing I do want to point out, I do sense a little bit of a shift with Chris Ballard as it comes to wide receiver, because of the arrival of Anthony Richardson and Shane Steichen, and the fact that the model that they're trying to implement from Philadelphia was all about flooding Jalen Hurts with wide receiver talent, from Devontae Smith as a top 10 pick to AJ Brown as a monster trade on draft day. And that's kind of been the one consistent thing they've all said, that they're going to add a pass catcher. That's kind of why I've been on that train a little bit more. I know Chris Ballard's nature is not to invest in wide receivers, but he had never paid one until he paid Michael Pittman Jr. So we've already seen one example of something new happening in that way. Now you could say, what else were they going to do? And that's fair. That was the kind of box that they were in at the time. But that's the one part of like Ballard's track record that I could see evolving a little bit, but probably not over the top, not like the hypothetical I wrote about this week.
I do think that here's the thing with wide receiver. They have to take one. There's no way around it. Whether it happens in the first round, second round, third round, they have to take one. They only have three guys who played last year. Like they only have three guys who played significant snaps last year. They have to take one. Ballard, whether or not he's taking one in the first round or whatever, I've been around him too long, I think, And free agency kind of beat me down this year in terms of assuming he's going to change or shift significantly from what he's done prior to this, because like they had cap space, they still have cap space. They needed to do something to they need to do something to take themselves to the next level. They signed two guys from the outside, one at backup quarterback and one at backup nose tackle. And like to me, the lesson was, or the lesson felt like, Chris Ballard is who he is. He's going to stick to this. They need Anthony Richardson and Shane Steichen to put them over the top. They feel like the like when they get a real quarterback, it'll put them over the top. That's part of it. I think I'm beaten down a little bit. I will say this: a trade up will shock me. Like, it would be the most interesting thing that could happen is a trade up of any kind. I will be very surprised if they do. I think it's really interesting if that happens. Let's move out of trying to guess Ballard, and move into like what I had to do this best case scenario draft for the Colts and or for what the Colts would want. And I think in a we'll throw Fantasyland out of it. Nate's already staked his claim to Marvin Harrison Jr. Yeah. But throwing Fantasyland out of it, like what do you want most out of the first round? Because I realize like if it's me, I have a specific thing that I have a specific player probably that I think is the one that I'm most interested in. So outside of Marvin Harrison, because I do think Marvin Harrison is going in the top five, and I don't think that they can get up that high. Yeah. Where are you looking?
So I think that the first round makes a lot more sense for them to go pass catcher than any other position, shy of somebody falling to them who's just not supposed to be there, which I think is what you're going to talk about here in a minute. But I know a lot of people are mocking cornerback to them for very obvious reasons. They didn't sign one. It was their worst position. It's kind of the range in the draft where it seems like the top cornerbacks are going to be. I would totally get it if that's what happened. But I think what's interesting here is when we talk about needs for a franchise, like we always go to like what position of theirs is the weakest, or maybe what premium position is the weakest. And cornerback is an easy answer. And I don't disagree. I've been talking about how that's why I thought they should have gone to free agency. But a big reason I thought they should have gone to free agency was to not be tempted by them so you could draft a first-round pass catcher. Because to me, the actual biggest need of the franchise is all about Anthony Richardson and evolving this passing game and hitting that ceiling. Because if they don't, it doesn't really matter what the cornerback room looks like or anything else. And I am mostly saying, like, you know, I did a mock draft today. So I had to do a 7-round mock draft. And I pretty much drafted under that mindset. In the first round, I took Brock Bowers, who happened to be there at 15. Second round, which I don't think this will happen, but Xavier Worthy was there. So I took him. And I ended up drafting a corner in the fourth round, which would be very surprising. In that scenario, I think they would have to go sign somebody after the draft, which there's a couple of options out there. But I think it is just so important to tap into this year's pass catcher group. It's like the one – it is such a goldmine in the NFL right now, these pass catchers coming in the NFL. And there's so many of them, but they're going at like high rates now that there's this race for them. That's all – a lot of those mock trades up in the top 10 are about the wide receivers or sometimes Brock Bowers. This is their chance to go get one of those high-end players. And if you look at their entire group of pass catchers right now, the only ones I think you can talk into having true high-end, like blow-your-mind potential in a realistic way, I don't know that there is one. You have to get over the durability concerns of Jelani Woods and talk yourself into that profile of the player, but we just haven't seen it enough to know that any more than anybody who's in the draft. I think Michael Pittman Jr. profiles, and I think they see him this way, is more of like ideally one of the best, you know, number two receivers in the league, the same way Devontae Smith is. So great player to have, but not the guy anchoring your passing game. They don't have a tight end who's established. Josh Downs is a great fit as a slot-only receiver. Alec Pierce has a good singular skill set of running down the ball field and catching routes. But for them to get a fully well-rounded, you know, weapon that, you know, to give that to Anthony Richardson and get it on a four-year rookie contract to avoid paying the rates that are going to those guys in free agency, which is they're hugely important to them, especially now that they're paying Pittman. To me, I'd like to see them take the best one available. The only one that I can see realistic if they're not trading up near the top five would be Brock Bowers. And so that, to me, if he's there at 15, I think that's the best case scenario.
I want Dallas Turner. I want Dallas Turner for several reasons. If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you know, I've been around long enough that I think most of you know by now. Well, we keep talking about this true difference-making edge rusher, the absolute, like, real difference-making edge rusher. We haven't necessarily seen that yet. We've seen some attempts. Kwity Paye was an attempt. I think by now we know he profiles more as sort of an all-around type starter who can give you effort sacks but is not going to dominate the edge the way that they need. It's the thing they don't have. And defensively, I think even more than a corner, even more than a shutdown corner, if you had a real honest-to-God superstar edge rusher, I think it transforms this defense in a way that it can help Anthony Richardson by not making him have to score a ton every game. Now, Dallas Turner is almost certainly going to go off the board before the Colts pick, especially if they don't trade up. The Falcons, Bears, there's another one I'm not thinking of. The Saints, are taking a tackle. But like there are a lot of places that he could definitely go. But if we're just talking about like what I think can get this team to the next level, it's that edge rusher. It's that actual edge rusher. I agree. I think most people agree with you. I think most people want a pass catcher.
I've seen a lot of people pushing for a corner, but I know that there is a specific love for Brock Bowers. I put a poll out today where I said, if they're picking at 15 and these four players are there, who do you want? The players were Bowers, Terrion Arnold, Quinyon Mitchell, and Brian Thomas Jr. So far, two-thirds of people have picked Brock Bowers. So in that sense, you're right. But to me, I don't know, that feels a little specific to him because I feel like the conversations may be different with Brian Thomas or someone like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I think maybe it's just because I was just on the radio right before we started doing this, and they were talking about – we talked a ton about wide receiver. I know people don't like this, but I think recent history bears it out. You can get a really great wide receiver in the second round. and in a way recently that you can't necessarily, it's a lot harder to get a pass rusher. So I think that's part of it too. It's just they've used second round picks on edge rushers and third round picks and you know, mid to late first round picks. They've never like gotten the best edge rusher in the draft, unless, I mean, the Kwity Paye year, there were some people who said that, but it was because it was a down year that way. They haven't gotten like the speed guy. And so I think that's part of it. But just to the second round thing, 2020 second round receivers, T. Higgins, Michael Pittman Jr. There's gotta be another one here. Cooper Kupp is a second rounder. I know Debo Samuel is a second rounder. There are these deep classes lately of wide receivers, and supposedly this is one.
Actually, a third rounder. Fun fact.
Oh, okay. There we go. So I was wrong on that, but Christian Watson is not a star yet because of injuries, but when he plays, he's pretty darn good. And George Pickens is a guy who is very productive. Now he's got some off the field stuff that you have to deal with, but George Pickens is another guy in the second round. They've had these Jaden Reed last year. They've had these guys that you can get that can really help your offense in the second round. And I think I understand what you're saying about the true, like, number one, like the Jamar Chase level player. I just want that edge rusher so bad. That's the thing. And I know they've got a lot of numbers there, but I think for this team, they don't have, you know, they've got DeForest Buckner, who I will defend as a impact player for a very long time. But he could use some help. And in a way off the edge that, like you said, like that they can just beat Max Protect. I'm trying not to go. I don't know with Dallas Turner. Like I'm not a scout, but he's supposedly the top edge rusher available, has the speed and length in his arms that Ballard tends to like. And, you know, I think that's like the ideal scenario for me. Now, moving the podcast along, realistically, the ideal scenario is not going to come up.
Yeah,
Turner's going to get picked. Falcons, Bears. You'd have to move up. Probably make a case for the. Could you make a case for the Jets? Everybody thinks Jets are just going to do what Rodgers wants. That's probably true.
I think they're going to go offense. I mean, I totally get that. I mean, Dallas Turner feels like he is in a different class of the other edge rushers, and the Colts have pretty much determined they need, or they don't have that top tier guy. So, and I totally agree about it. It's much harder to try and find that type of thing outside the first round. NFL.com's comparison for Dallas Turner is Brian Burns. So I'm instantly on board with that. I have no arguments about that. but
it's just that he's not going to get there.
Yeah, he's not going to get there. My other thing, too, like, I have nothing against that argument, except that, to me, defensive end feels like the perfect pick for them to make next year when they are, what, they're done with Quiddy Pay after this year if they don't pick up the option?
Yeah.
And they'll have 1 year left with Samson Ebukam. Seems like they're grooming Dio more for an inside role. They're going to, like, they got a lot of bodies there right now. Now, I mean, if Dallas Turner's there, he's going to start. He's going to be their top edge rusher and probably have Quiddy Pay be a rundown type player. And that's certainly totally fine to do. But to me, it's more about sort of, I look at it, I just look at this draft much more about, like, what does this franchise really need right now? And to me, that's getting the absolute most out of Anthony Richardson as a passer. And so that's kind of, it's just more of a priorities thing to me. But I mean, Dallas Turner is, yeah, I would have absolutely no complaints if that's how that works. But like you said, I don't think he's going to be there. Even in the seventh round mock draft I did, I chose Bowers, and Dallas Turner was there in that simulation, but I didn't pick him because I just don't believe he's actually going to be there. So that's why I went with Bowers. But yeah, I mean, if he falls, it's going to be hard to, and you can go and get like a guy like Xavier Worthy on day two. I mean, it certainly makes sense. It's hard to nitpick too much, especially, you know, if Dallas Turner, it's similar to wide receiver in the sense that, like, if he hits that ceiling, you have four or five years of him on a deal that doesn't pay the type of deal that Brian Burns just got from.
Yeah. From a financial standpoint, the torch then gets passed from Buckner to Turner if he hits like that.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, you envision a world where Turner is rushing next to DeForest Buckner, and you're going to double team DeForest and give a one-on-one pass rushing rep to Dallas Turner, and on the other side you have Dio Odangbo and either Quiddy Pay or Samson Ebukam or maybe Tyquan Lewis. Like, you can see how this would just suffocate. But I also wonder if they would get the most out of that given where their secondary is. Like, there's just some element of that where I do think that's their mentality. Is like,
it's interesting that neither of us went corner.
Yeah, so the corner thing, I mean, that's another one where, like, a guy like either Terron Arnold or Quinion Mitchell, if that's the pick, I'm not going to have any problem with it. It makes total sense in their needs. I think those are good players. I don't think this draft has that top-end corner, the Devon Witherspoon, Sauce Gardner. So it's like, it's an interesting debate of like, do you, you know, I've heard people say like, do you, the Colts could take either the top corner or like the number four wide receiver. And, but it's like, but that disparity is there for a reason, is that the wide receivers are so much better than the corners on the high end here. And it's tricky because I looked at corner, it falls off pretty badly after the first round.
The thing with corner is, and I ran into this when I did that best case scenario thing. In terms of fits for what the Colts like, once you're in the second round, like the guys are either too short, right, they're not athletic enough, like there's not a lot of fits from a what Ballard likes standpoint or what Gus Bradley likes standpoint. Is that kind of how you felt?
Yeah. There's a – trying to remember his name here. There's a Notre Dame corner that I drafted to them that actually fits very well. But it was very hard to find many of those. That's why I kept – in my seven-round mock draft, I only took him in the fourth round. It's Cam Hart. He's a Notre Dame corner who's like 6'3". So he was like the one, but yeah, most of them, each round I'd go and I'd look at the ones that are supposed to be projected up there and it'd be like, oh, this guy could be a great nickel corner. Or it's like, this guy's got all the, you know, all this long speed, but he doesn't work in press. And it's like, that is kind of what's weird about, not weird, but they do have a type here. And that's why Juju Brents was such an easy mock last year. I was like the one player I said they're going to draft him back at the combine, and they did. But it wasn't like it just was easy to see. This year it's harder to find those. And so if they feel like there just aren't scheme fits for them outside of these guys in the first round, and they also think they're the best in the draft, I mean, it's not surprising at all to see people mocking Quinion Mitchell for a lot of different reasons. For those reasons, for
Quinion Mitchell is a like – that's a Ballard corner.
It's such a Ballard corner. I mean, he's a great Senior Bowl player.
Arms aren't super long, but the speed is there. He's 6 feet tall.
Yeah.
Super explosive. A ton of ball production at Toledo. And like you said, Senior Bowl.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I get that. And if you envision their defense with Quinion Mitchell opposite Juju Brents with Jalen Jones as the backup outside corner, I mean, there is a world where that's a pretty good defense. I wonder what takes either side of the ball to grate that same way. You know, it seems like their defense is like pretty good in a lot of spots, but great in very few. And then I'm still wondering kind of what, like I could see, part of why I want a pass catcher is that like, I think their run game is going to be absolutely electric next year if they can keep Jonathan Taylor and Anthony Richardson on the field together, which is a challenge, but on paper it could be absolutely stunning. You still have to have something more than that to be a real threat. We've seen the Ravens peter out in the playoffs when that's what they do, and then there's not that next gear. So that's to me kind of like, I don't know, that's, you talk in circles with all this about like what's the balance between patching a weakness like corner versus overloading an edge rusher with a great player versus just foregoing that and saying we're going to just build the best offense we can. I personally would go for the best offense because I just think at the end of the day, if they actually became dominant as a passing and rushing team, that to me is just more valuable in this era of football than balancing out the defense that way. But I also, part of it is I also trust Chris Ballard to draft on defense out of round one better than some other spots.
I don't trust him to draft edge rusher outside of round one. That's, I understand, fair, what you're saying. But I don't trust him to draft edge rusher outside of round one. I think part of mine stems from Shane Steichen. Like, it's only 1 year. Who knows if it's going to keep going. I just think he got so much out of a Gardner Minshew-led offense that I'm willing to try to upgrade a defense that was 28th in points last year and count on Steichen to use the stuff he has with him and get the most out of Richardson from an explosive standpoint. So that's part of it. I think you can go back and forth on this. Now let's try to get into like realistically what we think is going to happen.
Trade back twice and draft a blocking tight end.
That's over the top.
You said I wasn't beaten down enough, so I had to
realistic. I said realistic.
Okay.
A blocking tight end in the first or high second round, that even for Ballard, that would be a lot. I'm not convinced Bowers is going to be there.
I agree.
I think that he's so far above the rest of the tight end class in terms of the way people perceive him. And there's three clear receivers. I assume all of them are going to be gone.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like someone is going to say, well, we can get one of the receivers. We're going to get the tight end. Usually when there's a guy like that, they end up going really high in the draft. Now, we can get into whether or not that's worked out for teams in the past. But typically, when there's somebody who's really, really high, who's like way and above the rest of the class, usually they go really high in this in the first round, like beyond the 15 spot.
Especially if your mentality is like, we want one of the top wide receivers, they're not there. It's not a stretch to just be like, okay, we'll just throw a lot to Brock Bowers. Like,
yeah.
You have targets in your offense. You have a hierarchy that needs to be established, and he's going to fit in any offense where you actually prioritize him and make him like a high volume guy. So
also outside of the Bears and the Falcons, like the teams in front of the Colts,
yeah, they could all use him.
Yeah. Where's the tight end? You know?
Yeah, that may end up being the Jets pick.
A lot of people are starting to predict that. I do think, though, and I think Ballard's probably right about this. It feels like there's going to be quarterbacks, tackles, and receivers galore in the first however many picks. I know the Saints are pretty locked in at tackle because basically Ryan Ramczyk has basically got a medical condition that's like debilitating. Mm-hmm. It's kind of developed this offseason. And like, so that's a tackle spot. There's other teams up there that need the Titans are an obvious tackle spot. This is hard because honestly, we focus so much on the Colts, it's hard for me to pay attention to everybody else. But like, the quarterback thing is obvious. The receivers are so good, everyone expects them to be gone. The tackles, everyone's kind of been on that the whole time. It just feels like there's a lot of offensive guys and offensive needs in that first 14 picks.
Yeah, and I mean, what we just said about Brock Bowers is going to apply. Some team's going to miss on him at receiver or on the top receivers, and he's going to be like that number four pass catcher that people want. So, I mean, it's a good year to draft defense if that's what you're looking for, and that may be exactly how they're looking at it. Is they needed upgrades on defense. They didn't go out and sign them. They brought back a lot of guys, and they added a backup defensive tackle, but they didn't make any upgrades. You know, you could argue on offense they don't necessarily need an upgrade at any one position outside of probably tight end. But if you want to talk yourself into –
definitely need depth at certain positions.
But yeah, they mostly need depth options. It's like they could use upgrades, but they don't. It doesn't feel like they have to have them. Whereas on defense, it does feel like they have to find an upgrade at corner. And so, I don't know. This corner is weird to me because I feel like
right.
What's that?
I can't remember if we said this or not, but cornerback is the biggest need, right? That's what I feel like.
It's the weakest position.
Yeah.
But I think the biggest need is helping Anthony Richardson. So it depends on how you want to look at that. But no doubt it's the worst position, the one they need to upgrade in terms of – or can upgrade the most. So, yeah, I feel like these are interesting exercises because you kind of talk in circles. I've been tough on them all offseason for not signing a corner. But a big part of it is like part of my thing with corner two is my issue with them is not that the corners are just not good enough. It's that they're not old enough. And so getting another rookie, I don't know how that solves the issue. Like Chris Ballard just the other day was, you know, he said at the end of the year, I didn't give Gus Bradley enough experience back there in the secondary, and it was my fault. He got asked to kind of, well, where are you at now? You didn't add anybody. He said, well, now we're not as young anymore because these guys played. If they go out and they draft a rookie and start him, they're going right back to where they were. Now they're more talented, and it can work out in the long run. But I just don't think the draft is going to be the solution for what they actually need in the secondary. I don't think it's just – certainly they need more numbers at corner. That's why I think they need to draft one somewhere in the top four picks. But that's – I guess that's kind of the hesitation I have about the first-round corners. I don't think that's the solution to that specific need the way that other people seem to think it is. Just with the makeup of their group, it's just like Juju Brents played 9 games last year. Jalen Jones played a lot, but he needed to play a lot because he was so raw as a 7th-round pick. I kind of hit a rookie wall late. I don't know what he ultimately is. Dallas Flowers did not get much time. He's coming off the Achilles tear. I don't know if adding another rookie to that room, it certainly raises the floor in terms of they have more numbers now. There's fewer guys who can go down. It's a better player in the outside, a premium spot. You're less of a hole at a premium spot. I think it helps the floor. But if we're talking about like, we're going to help this, like you're trying to help this 9-8 team not just get to the playoffs, but like be a danger in the playoffs. I just don't know that Juju Brents in a rookie corner going up against Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins is going to make you feel like you got there. So that's sort of my hesitation with it.
Yeah. The hard part here is that like wide receiver, tight end, cornerback, pass rusher to some extent, but like I think if you get the top pass rusher in the draft, we've seen that guy be productive a lot. Yeah. But wide receiver, corner, tight end, even tight end, like there's a lot of you might not get immediate impact in this particular level of the first round, you know, historically. Like, and I don't think the hard part is no one really wants to hear that right now because we want to hear about like what these guys can do. But like realistically, in terms of historically what teams have gotten in terms of immediate impact in this like 15 range, there's some hits and there's some significant misses, you know, that doesn't mean you don't take one of those players. Like I think I saw somewhere today, I think Schefter tweeted that somebody at ESPN like tried to figure out like what the most safe first round pick is, and it was center. And like, duh, you don't pick a center in the first round unless they're like a generational center. So
you draft a first round center and he's not ready to go.
Yeah. That's same thing with like the rest of the, I mean, and the other thing is the Colts don't need offensive linemen. Like you know, it's not that you would not make a pick because of that, but in terms of, and this is, I think, part of why I think there's so much frustration from basically all circles except the Colts that they haven't done more outside, is just like you put so much on these rookies by not signing anybody, mm-hmm. by saying like they have to be great right away. Have to. And Chris Ballard is the thing is, Chris Ballard is going to come out as soon as they make the pick and say, don't expect him to be great right away. But like, you're also doing that by not signing anybody. That's to me is the piece that like there's a disconnect there. It's like, mm-hmm. it's like he's absolutely going to say, you know, sometimes it takes time with wide, like if it's a wide receiver, he'll be like, sometimes it takes time with wide receivers. We can't expect him to transform everything right away. He'll do it with corner. He's done it every pick since I've been here. But they kind of need this draft class. They don't kind of. They do need this draft class to elevate them. And you can't count on a draft pick to do that right away. You just can't. Now I will say this. They have gotten a lot of immediate impact during Ballard's time. You can go back through just about every draft class and see somebody who started a lot of games or played a significant role, or in the case of like Quentin Nelson or Jonathan Taylor or Shaq Leonard or Braden Smith, like you got an actual real player right away. But for all those guys I just named, Quiddy Pay had 4 sacks. Rocky Sin wasn't ready. Alec Pierce didn't change the offense a ton. Like, counting on whoever the first pick is
wasn't healthy.
Yeah, counting on the first couple of picks to automatically elevate you is a crapshoot. Like, for every 1,100 yard season you get from Jonathan Taylor, you have a 4 sack season from Quiddy Pay where he's injured a little bit and it is helpful but not a difference maker.
And that's kind of what's tough about this exercise is we're meshing like what we think they should do. And in a way it's like, well, let me talk about what I think they already should have done. Like
that's good. I like that.
You know, like they're in some weird spots because of the way that they've done this so far. And I didn't just think cornerback people. It's hard to argue, but a lot of people are pushing back. Anytime you bring up a position, it's not corner. Like we have to draft a corner. We don't have any. And part of me is like, that's why they should have signed them, but they didn't. And here they are. And it's, I don't know. It's sort of like we can talk about what they should do, but that conversation, we got to go back 2 months on that conversation because it's not as simple as say what they should do in this draft, because if you just stick to that, it's going to be something that didn't jive with what they've already done.
Right.
I mean, just as a case.
They still could sign secondary players. They still could.
And that's kind of the one thing that is also why I'm a little bit on pass catcher. I still think there's just barely enough on the free agent market to help you out in those areas. Like if they go out and they sign a guy like Steven Nelson, who started in the AFC South and is probably starting caliber, if not, you know, not special, that to me gets you close enough to what year one production would be out of a rookie cornerback, but it solves some of the youth issues. That to me is different than like saying, I don't think they have the same option to go sign a wide receiver, a tight end who can do the type of thing I'm looking for at that spot. So that's the same thing, but you can make that argument at edge rusher. If you want like a war daddy, Dallas Turner is the only route to go, but will be there.
We'll wrap this up real quick. We'll probably end up doing. It's hard to know exactly how this is going to go in terms of can we pod after the first round, that kind of thing. But let's wrap this up by just going like, what are some you always end up focusing on the first couple rounds, and then for obvious reasons, like those are the most important picks. But there's some other like sneaky needs on the roster. I'm going to throw out a couple. I'm gonna have you see, basically pick up whatever I forget to get in there. Backup running back.
Mm-hmm.
Linebacker is not. I don't think I really need to talk much about backup running back. Zach Moss is gone. They haven't replaced him with anybody. It's not that I don't believe in Trey Sermon, but he's been on 3 teams in 3 years. You know, the pedigree's not like the pedigree before is not really there. Like I want another option. So, but linebacker, I think linebacker is a very underrated need. You got Zaire Franklin and EJ Speed. And beyond that, it's Shigulobi. It's Grant Stewart. It's Cam McGrone. There's one other I'm missing. But if Zaire Franklin or EJ Speed go down, you don't have a great option. Ronnie Harrison, that's the other one I'm thinking of. Ronnie Harrison. None of those four I just said are what I would consider to be like up and coming starting caliber linebackers. And EJ Speed's headed into the last year of his deal. So linebacker, I think, is another one. And then maybe interior offensive line, just because you've got a couple of people headed to free agency.
Yeah, I agree with those. I mean, running back, the thing about it is Jonathan Taylor is obviously a workhorse, but that's 2 straight years he's dealt with injuries. If he goes down, you don't want all the rushing responsibility to fall on the quarterback that you're also trying to keep healthy. So I think they should go for, you know, a guy that can be that type of player. Like I mocked them, Audric Estime out of Notre Dame. There's guys like a local guy, Isaac Arendo out of Louisville. There's some guys like that who can be sort of like, they can offer more than what's currently in your room right now. And linebacker is the one, like, it is underrated because they have a pipeline here where they draft a guy in day three, they start him on special teams, and then they develop him into a starter, and they get him for very cheap on that the course of that deal. That was Zaire Franklin, that's EJ Speed. And I think they need that next one now. So a guy, and we know they need special teams coverage help. So it makes a lot of sense to get like a special team or linebacker who can also add to the depth at those spots. The one other one I'll throw out there is I think they need a return man.
So, oh, I like this. Yes, go.
This is partly why Xavier Worthy is so interesting, as he's an electric punt returner. They kind of could use either one of those, punt returner, kick returner. Now the new kickoff rules are such that you could use two kick returners. So you think Dallas Flowers, you know, if he can get back, can fill one of those spots. But I don't love the idea of using Josh Downs as your punt returner and making him a high-volume slot receiver. They kind of did it. They did it when Isaiah McKenzie got suspended, and it, you know, he's good enough to do it, but it's just a lot to put on one player, and you know, I'd rather save him for offense. And so if they can get a punt returner, so it's one of those, like, if either the wide receiver or the corner they draft, I think if they have return skills, they're going to move up the board because of that. So those ones stand out. And then, yeah, that's mostly all the needs. I guess the one other thing I think they could think about, it's less of a need, but if they want to go for like a late pick at quarterback, who's like a third stringer, developmental, you know, mobile type of player, like I mocked them Joe Milton out of Tennessee. If he happens to be there, it has to be one where he has to be the right fit, because they have Sam Ellinger there, and it's, you know, it's a third string guy, but you know, Joe Flacco's 39 years old. It's a great fit for right now, but you know, going forward, you're going to need a backup you can rely on behind Anthony Richardson. And those Shane Steichen's proving they don't feel like it has to be a mobile one. I do think it'd be kind of interesting if they could get that and develop it. You know, guy that's going to fall in the draft because he's not, you know, he's raw, but they've got a couple years to work with. That could make some sense.
One last position I think we can end here. Safety's a weird spot to me. It's a hard spot to think about and project because, number one, this is not supposed to be a good safety class. Mm-hmm. There's not really a first rounder available, at least according to the analyst that I've seen. It's not super. Doesn't seem super deep. It seems like a pretty bad safety class. And the Colts have a ton of uncertainty at safety. We don't know if Nick Cross or Rodney Thomas can be a reliable long-term starting free safety. Julian Blackman is on a one-year deal with an injury history. And yes, he's coming off a career year and he was great last year, but you kind of have to do it again. That position, I think the reason that we're maybe not talking about it more in the draft has to do with the class. Like, if it was a better safety class, I think we're talking about, you know, if there's an actual first rounder available, I think we're talking about, is that person a player at 15? You know what I mean? Because,
oh, yeah.
Or second or third round, it's not a great safety class. And I think that's maybe pushed it down the list a little bit for everybody, but they are uncertain at both spots, and all three of their top guys are question marks in one way or the other. So I think safety is an interesting position to me, because I'm sure there are good players in this draft class at safety. It's just, when do you take them? How do they fit? What does it mean going forward?
It's a super interesting position because of the spot they're in and what's available to them. Because if there was that difference maker, especially as a free safety, it could be just an easy mock to put in for the Colts, but there's not. So there's other players that can be either developmental players, backups, but I think that's where the Colts feel like they're all right. It's the depth at safety between Rodney Thomas at free safety, Ronnie Harrison can play strong safety, and they want to see what they have in a Daniel Scott when he bounces back. We haven't seen anything out of him, but they just keep bringing him up as a guy that they like. The question mark there is Nick Cross ready to be your starting free safety? And can Julian Blackman stay healthy and do it again? And it's almost like they don't – what's the actionable – like, what's the action to follow up those questions with? It's almost like they have to kind of – they're going to play it out and see. Again, when we talk about, like, what should they do versus what should they have already done, I think if your plan was to play Nick Cross at free safety, I like that plan. I've always – been bullish on Nick Cross. You shouldn't have waited till week 16 to try it. But that's what just doesn't make any sense to me. You're banking on two games of watching him do it to say he's now our free safety. So I think that's what they're going to do, and it may work out. And he's talented. Julian Blackman had a great year. It could end up working out nicely. It could also end up being a position that's – it's possible they need two of them next year because Julian's in a contract year and – Nick Cross is going to get his year to prove what he is. So it is very hard to understand, like, where it's one of those positions that they seem to have put themselves in a position with it. And we're going to just have to see if it works or not.
The crazy thing is that sometimes doing that works for this team. That's the crazy thing.
It's still possible since they created extra room with the DeForest Buckner contract, they could go out and sign Quandre Diggs or Justin Simmons. I think it's very unlikely.
The money's there. The cap space is there.
Guys are there. The fit is there. Like, it isn't like they can't do it. But
it's not the hard part, and this goes back to what we were saying at the top of the draft with the trade up thing. We're almost at the point now in the eighth offseason with Chris Ballard where, like, can they or should they almost feel like futile things to talk about? And that the only thing that matters is will they? Right?
Yeah.
I'm beaten down a little bit. I'm beaten down, Nate. I could use a trade up or something to inject some. I've always been the cover two deep shell person on the way the Colts operate. But I think more than ever, I'm just like, this thing you're hoping for happening is just not going to happen because it just keeps not happening.
Yep. We're on year eight of it too. So maybe we'll do eight more years of this podcast at the same
time. I got one DeForest Buckner trade. That's what I got.
He did trade a first round pick for a quarterback once.
Yeah, the quarterback thing was just a cascade of we don't know what to do's in a row.
Yeah, I mean,
the one time they did know what to do, it worked out. But then he retired, and good news is we're not worried about quarterback right now. The Colts aren't worried about quarterback right now. So at the very least, that position is taken care of. We'll see where they go in the draft. There's a lot of it's an interesting draft because they have a lot of numbers at a lot of positions. There's a lot of different ways they could go. And they do need this player to elevate them, especially in an AFC South that appears to have gotten better. But just even if it hasn't necessarily gotten better, they were on the edge of the playoffs last year, and they need to get into it next year. For the Colts Cover 2 podcast, I'm Joel A. Erickson. This has been Nate Atkins. We will talk to you at some point this weekend after we find out what the Colts do. Nate's probably scaring you with two trade backs and a blocking tight end, but I don't actually think it would be a blocking tight end. Two trade backs and a corner, maybe.
The range is either Marvin Harrison or blocking tight end, so there's a lot in there. It can be anything.
Nate is trying to be all things to all people.
Yep.
With this podcast. So that's our Cover 2 podcast. Enjoy the draft. I think it's a lot more fun for you guys than it is for us.